The English novelist Jane Austen included this sentence in her 1815 novel, Emma. One half of the world cannot understand the pleasures of the other. The same is true, I think, of the American South. Those outside this region often have a hard time understanding the pleasures of this place. And that's kind of why folks like me have a job. And to explain Southern culture, and probably any culture, you have to understand four important things from that culture. It's literature, it's visual art, it's food, and it's music. In all of these areas, the cultural output of the South is distinct from the rest of our nation and the rest of the world, particularly in the 20th century. In literature, our region shaped legendary writers, Welty, Hurston, Faulkner. In visual art, painters like Nellie Mae Roe and mixed media artists like Thornton Dial and photographers like Sally Mann. In food, you can just start with fried chicken and pound cake and go in 1,000 different distinctly Southern directions. And in music, you don't even have to name names at all, because Southerners defined most every genre of music that came to prominence in the last century. The blues, jazz, gospel, soul and R&B, rock and roll. And in the final years of the century came the genre that would rule the global musical universe, Southern hip-hop. It was not difficult in the 20th century for any listener to hear a piece of Southern music and fit it neatly into one of those six musical genres. But that has not been the case in the first 25 years of this century. Fried chicken is still fried chicken, but Southern music is no longer easily described.
I don't creep around, I stand proud and free, 'cause I'm black.
That voice belongs to a musician from East Tennessee named Amethyst Kia. That version of her song, Black Myself, is from a project called Our Native Daughters, which featured Kia and the Grammy and Pulitzer Prize-winning North Carolina musician Rhiannon Giddens. And what did you hear in that? For one, you heard a banjo in a distinctly non-bluegrass song. Second, you heard a black musician asserting her people's proud role in the story of the South. And finally, you heard a young musician using her own experiences of this region to reckon with its history.
You know, this part of the country has a, you know, pretty tumultuous history. It's kind of been easy for people to kind of see, like, the North was like the safe haven and the do-gooders, and the South was sort of like the evil power. And a lot of, you know, civilizations, you know, have very complicated stories. With the Southern experience, I think it's, you know, a lot more complex than I think some people tend to give it credit for.
If you're interested in getting past the moonlight and magnolias mythology of the Old South, the way to do it is to complicate people's understanding of our region. That, to me, is the thread that connects the most vital Southern music of this century. And Amethyst Kia is hardly the only musician from down here who's playing that game. Today, we will take you on a tour of Southern music that challenges stereotypes. Y'all stick with us to hear music from several corners of this century's Southern music scene, and listen in as we talk to the folks who make that music. I'm Chuck Reese, and welcome to a new edition of Salvation South Deluxe, a series of in-depth pieces that we add to our regular podcast feed. On Salvation South Deluxe, we unravel untold stories of the Southern experience, and we introduce you to people who make this region truly unique.
The daddy's generation, the byproduct of war and segregation, still thinking they can tell us what to do, who can live where and who can love who.
My name is BJ Barham. I am the lead singer of a band out of Raleigh, North Carolina called American Aquarium.
Since 2005, American Aquarium has toured the world playing music that sounds, as you just heard, kind of country, kind of rock and roll. Sonically, it sounds a little like the southern rock that flooded out of Macon, Georgia back in the 1960s and 70s. But you're never going to hear BJ Barham, who writes and sings Aquarium songs, sing about how the South's going to do it again. Far more likely, you will hear him sing about how the South got a lot of things wrong.
We are not a soft folk band. We are a loud, shit-kicking rock and roll band. We just happen to be fronted with a redneck that's read a couple books and likes to write words. So I'm not just up here mumbling about stuff. I'm screaming actual lyrics.
Barham grew up in rural North Carolina, and his point of view is shaped by how, in his opinion, country music lost its way back in the late 20th century.
And somewhere along the line, I'm going to say 80s, 90s, it quickly became about, you know, cold beer, dirt road, pretty girl, pickup truck. And it stopped being less about like, hey, how about we unionize? How about we all have kind of the same benefits as everybody else? How about we stop picking people out based on skin color and creed and religious preference.
Country music got away from Merle Haggard singing the working man blues and John Prine singing about coal companies strip mining mountaintops in Kentucky. And it moved to acts like Big and Rich singing Save a Horse, Ride a Cowboy, in which the narrator's girl says he is a thoroughbred in his truck bed who is getting buzzed on suds out on a country road. Barham got it right. Cold beer, dirt road, pretty girl, pickup truck.
The music that came from the South was always some form of protest music. Country music used to be, it would be called woke these days, you know, what we consider country music and folk music. You're rallying against something bigger than yourself. You're coming together as people to sing about the problems you see in the world.
Here in the 21st century, the South is full of bands and songwriters, perhaps like Barham himself, rednecks who have read a few books, who write tunes that aim to turn back the tide of the cold beer flowing out of the back of jacked-up pickup trucks. Here's a little bit of a newer song from American Aquarium called Southern Roots.
Oh, those boys back home are much too proud. This godforsaken battleground, and that flag that they still won't take down after all this time.
We're starting to see a lot more inclusivity in country music, which I think is amazing, because country music has always been the voice of the people. And I think for a long time, especially the last couple decades, it's been the voice of, you know, mediocre white dudes. And so it's nice to see the tables kind of turn. As a mediocre white dude, I love that it's taking a turn to where it is quickly becoming the music of the people again. And that's a beautiful thing to be a part of.
As another joyfully mediocre white dude, I can get behind that. The inclusivity that B.J. Barham talks about in 21st century Southern music comes along with some radical blurring of the lines between genres. Styles are mixing in ways that we have never heard before.
Southeast Georgia, nothing but cows and blue-collared employment. Ain't nothing to do but work and get pulled over. Not a lot of folks that look like you, but it's your home, so you try and enjoy it. Southeast Georgia, nothing but red flags and mental disorder. A lot of hate, and it's right at your doorstep. You be around big.
That is Chris Casey, a 20-year-old independent musician from Savannah, Georgia. Though he does rap in his songs, his music does not fit neatly into the hip-hop genre box.
I do consider it rap, but also it's like, it is like very rock, you know? There's so many artists that I can point to. They're rapping, just like straight up rapping over like, you know, distorted guitars, and like there's drum breakdowns in there. Like some of them just have like straight up rock songs where like they're singing the whole time, like they come in with a rap verse. They never like draw too much attention to it. It's kind of just like, this is our song. This is the music that we make. We're rapping, we're singing, we're doing guitars, like all this. And that was like the coolest thing ever. I was like, if I could make music like that, then that would be like tight.
Casey has been trying to make music like that since he was a teenager. But he rounded up a larger audience early this year when his song Cow Killers, which you just heard a bit of, came out and started getting passed around in social media.
But yeah, I've been releasing and making music since I was about 14. And like, it didn't really start like taking off or like getting like serious traction until like earlier this year in like January. Cow Killers pretty much was it. Those first lines in the first verse of like Southeast Georgia, nothing but cows and blue collared employment, right? I was trying to like just like make myself laugh, like trying to think of stuff that's like funny to say, trying to be like a little funny and lighthearted with it, but like just saying like stuff that's like real to me, you know?
Southeast Georgia, nothing but humid air and weather that scorch you. Nothing but cow killers that's trying to extort you. They'll say you one of them and pretend to adore you till they take you out back and torture. I can't blame them, they just following orders from daddy, grandpappy, everybody before them. My final words.
Casey released a series of short videos on YouTube to promote Cow Killers. And in all of them, he wears a red gingham shirt under blue denim overalls and a straw hat. Sort of a hayseed looking character.
Got the shirt from Goodwill, just like really basic, like cartoon farmer, basically. One of the original ideas was like, I wanted to get my hands on like a Confederate flag. That was like along the lines of like where I wanted to go, like lean maybe a little bit more into like the shock factor of it all. Because, you know, around where I grew up, like that was just so common to see like people have it in front of their house or like on their license plate or, you know, just anywhere you can think of. Like, it's just a really common thing.
Although he got most of his schooling in Savannah, he did grow up in farm country west of that city.
Technically, I'm from like a small town called Pembroke, and it's like 30, 40 minutes away from Savannah. When I was going to school in like Pembroke area, like the neighborhood I lived in was around like three farms, just like straight up cattle, horses, like all that. And when I go to school, it would be often like I would probably be like the only black kid in like my class, maybe one other person, but like it was mainly just like, you know, white people, very country. And so I think like being around that in like the early like formative years of like when I was a kid, it's just something like you pay attention to, but like you don't fully like comprehend like what that's like until later. For the record, I don't think there was ever an experience I had that was like deeply like, you know, straight up like, oh, that was like hateful or anything like that. Like it was never anything like serious, but it's just like little things that you notice.
Southeast Georgia, nothing but pickup trucks, them wheels is enormous. I was a young buck, I didn't have horns yet, and they were screaming Black Lives Matter. But it's hard to see the torment when your girlfriend is white and gorgeous, and all your friends got jokes of the dark type, and they like to make fun because your skin is the dark type, and they throw around silly words that rhyme with bigger, and anytime you point it out, they turn you to a villain. So
Casey's first multi-song release is an EP called Buried Out Back. Of the eight songs on it, Cow Killers most vividly captures his feelings about growing up between worlds. A black kid growing up around white kids, sometimes having his friends throw around the N-word, teenagers trying, as teenagers do, to be edgy.
Seeing Confederate flags around just like normal, like it becomes like you're like not really fazed by it after a certain point, but then you look back on it as you get older and you're like, wow, that is like kind of like crazy.
Salvation South Deluxe will be back after this short break. Welcome back. So far, we've talked about country music breaking out of the beer plus truck plus girls plus dirt roads equation and getting into more substantial territory about the South's forward movement. And we've heard what happens when a young Southern musician can express his personal experiences with absolutely no regard for fitting into a particular genre or style. Which brings me back to the woman you heard at the beginning of this show, Amethyst Kia of Johnson City, Tennessee. As I noted earlier, Kia gained her first national recognition as part of Rhiannon Giddens' Our Native Daughters project several years ago. Even though Kia is well-schooled in the folk and old-time musical traditions of the South, when you listen to the music she has released in the last few years, you hear a woman in full, somebody whose art, whose music expresses all of her personal experiences, all the learning she has absorbed in her 30-odd years of living, and a fiery determination to stake out a place in the musical landscape that only she could occupy.
I think I have always in my music made it a point to look at the complexities of, you know, being human. You know, the first part of my career, you know, I focused a lot on reinterpreting, you know, old-time folk songs.
Kia grew up in the suburbs outside of Chattanooga, absorbing all sorts of music.
Most of my music listening time was spent, like, alone in my room, just exploring different sounds and ideas and being like, wow, that's awesome. So whether it be like, you know, Loretta McKennitt, or whether it be the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, or whether it be Tori Amos or Bjork, you know, I would go places to go see a show and I wouldn't think about how I'm dressed compared to everyone else or whether or not I've ever like culturally fit in one way or the other. It's always been about like, wow, this music is awesome.
When she was 17, her mother died by suicide, and her father, laid low by grief, fell into a spiral of substance abuse. 2 years later, her father moved them both into the Appalachian Mountains of northeastern Tennessee.
My mom had passed. We just went to Johnson City to start over, to live with my grandmother and kind of, you know, start our life over, put the pieces back together.
Johnson City is the home of East Tennessee State University. And for four decades, ETSU has been the home of America's first bluegrass, old-time, and roots music studies program.
I wanted to take some sort of, like, some sort of class, some sort of music class. I looked through the course catalog and saw bluegrass group guitar. Initially, I had checked into, like, a classical guitar class because I took classical guitar in high school, but I didn't really like the formality of it. And so when I came across this bluegrass guitar class, I was like, bluegrass guitar? And all I knew about bluegrass was the Beverly Hillbillies and Deliverance. Like, that was my extent of knowledge.
Pretty scary.
So I know. I was like, huh, interesting. But I'm a curious person, and I'm like, well, it's a music class, and I can play guitar, and, you know, why not?
At the time, Jack Tottle, the musician who founded ETSU's Bluegrass Old Time and Roots program, was still teaching.
So I called Jack Tottle and I asked him if I was going to have to like have a footstool and learn how to sight read and all that kind of stuff. Cause I quite literally had no idea about any of it. And he said, no, this is an oral tradition. So, you know, we learn by ear and, you know, bring a tape recorder. I'm going to be using guitar tablature. So if you know how to do all those things, you'll fit right in. It was really great taking that class and also meeting him because he was someone that was very well steeped in the history and knew about the West African influence.
Now, if you, dear listener, have never heard the phrases bluegrass music and West African influence put together, that's because you have never learned that the banjo, which strikes most people as an awfully white instrument, actually originated in West Africa. Like so much of the best parts of Southern culture, the banjo came here with enslaved people.
and I learned how to play clawhammer banjo. Also, I learned about the Carolina chocolate drops.
Many of you will remember the Carolina Chocolate Drops, a black musical group that was led by the aforementioned Rhiannon Giddens. In the early teens, the Chocolate Drops won Grammy Awards by reclaiming Appalachia's black string band traditions from a century before.
So there was kind of this perfect storm of me like slowly coming into the music and realizing, you know, okay, well, even though I don't think I should have to have a birthright in order to play this music, there is a history here that that I am culturally connected to. That's when I first realized that I was Appalachian. I didn't even think of myself as Appalachian per se, or that Chattanooga was part of Appalachia. Like, I just was so cut off from all of that stuff. So it was interesting learning about it through, you know, through school. I think that was such an important part of my development as not just as a musician and artist, but also just as a person. Like, for the first time, I was like, oh, so I am part of a story. You know, I have a music history. There's a cultural history here that that I'm able to, you know, get back in touch with.
By the end of the teens, Rhiannon Giddens had invited Amethyst Kia into the Our Native Daughters Project. And while she was working with Giddens, Kia wrote Black Myself, that album's brash opening salvo, which you heard a bit of at the beginning of this show.
And then when I really got into songwriting, it was a cathartic project to like work through my emotions about, you know, grief and loss and feeling, you know, wary and strange, if you will.
Her 2021 full-length album bore that as its title, Wary and Strange. Here's a bit of Firewater, one of my favorite songs on that album.
Melancholy always seemed a word for me. Wistful and uncertain are my dreams. Stardust forms into shapes that never leave. Strange and wary they all seem. I'm a ghost in the hall, I hang in the room. Everywhere I go, impending doom. How many spirits does it take to lift a spirit? I don't know. I don't know.
Surely you just noticed Kia using a musical palette on that song that had far more colors than the sepia tones of old-time Southern music. And it was amazing for a listener like me, who first fell in love with Kia's writing via the acoustic version of Black Myself from 2018, to hear how she recast that song as a strident rock anthem in 2021. I wash away the blood. Amethyst Kia's sonic world grew even wider on her 2024 album, Still and Bright.
It's really been on this last album, Still and Bright, that I've actively, you know, I've had the capacity to kind of be able to really talk about the things that are directly challenging societal expectations. You know, looking at how, you know, the Bible Belt and particularly fundamentalist or evangelical Christianity really, in a lot of ways, damages the psyche of lots of kids and even people that, like me, that didn't even grow up in the tradition. I grew up in a place where I wasn't part of it, and so I was made to feel other about it.
The South that Amethyst Kia envisions today is one that rises above prejudices and threats of damnation. What she's searching for instead, to borrow the title of one of her new songs, is an empire of love.
there's like a broad brush painted on what it means to be Appalachian, who Appalachians are. And I think the same thing extends, you know, to the wider South as well. You know, each individual has a very individualized experience. There's, you know, overall like cultural, societal expectations. And really each person, you know, has their own, you know, neurology, the way their brains work, their own personality, the way they respond to whatever the societal norms are.
Which I think gets at the crux of what I've been trying to put my finger on during this ramble through the Southern music of the current century. The finest Southern music so far in the 2000s, to my ears at least, is made by people who don't care what a song is supposed to sound like according to any old norms, who feel no need to use common music or lyrical denominators. Musicians who are completely unafraid to express their own points of view about this place, who incorporate our musical traditions if they help them get a point across, or ignore them if they don't. Earlier, you heard me invoke the memory of the late, great John Prine. Back in April, we were pleased to present John's son, Tommy, on the Salvation South stage at the Word of South Festival in Tallahassee. And we heard him play a brand new song called Oh, What a Dream, which was inspired by a documentary he had seen about the healthcare crisis in Appalachia and across the rural South.
And there's plenty of small communities all over West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky and parts of Eastern Tennessee where they're losing their hospitals left and right. And they're really like the only hospital for the communities that live there for them to go to and the surrounding communities that are even smaller. And that hospital was still around. A lot of the folks that live near that hospital don't qualify for health care. And there was this one couple that they interviewed that really, really deeply struck a chord with me. It was this older couple, and the husband was a coal miner, and his wife, she ended up getting a debilitating disease that rendered her unable to work. Some years go on, and his wife gets so sick that she can't even leave the bed anymore for the rest of her life. She's in permanent bed rest. And there was this one question that the interviewer asked this man, and it still is hard for me not to choke up talking about it, but he said, do you ever dream about your wife being able to stand up out of that bed one day so you guys can start making memories? And he sat there, and the only thing he said was, oh, what a dream, I've had that dream. And that just, yeah, really touched me, man. And I wrote a song called Oh, What a Dream to share their story.
The doctors couldn't help her, nor could Charlie's wait. Sarah couldn't stand it when he'd look at her that way. Burdens were bound to get heavy. She grew quiet on the call. The kettles boiled over. Oh God, how the stars.
Tommy, that's a great song. And I hope people will take the lesson that's inside it, and I see people wiping tears away. So I think it's working. After Tommy came off the stage that day in April, we asked him what he thought it means to be a Southerner.
I think to be a Southerner means that you have a responsibility to open your heart to everyone you meet.
I sure do like that definition. All of these artists whose music we've presented to you here live up to that responsibility. And regardless of the fact that their music might sound and speak to us now in ways that are different from how Southern music sounded and spoke to us years back, I think it is our responsibility as listeners to hear it with open hearts. We have many people to thank for their help and cooperation producing this episode. Amethyst Kia and her team, BJ Barham and all of his bandmates and crew in American Aquarium, Chris Casey and Tommy Prine, Mark Mustian and Sarah Marchessault and their crew at Tallahassee's Word of South Festival, who moved heaven and earth to make it possible for us to document what happened on the Salvation South stage. I should also thank our producer and theme music composer, Jake Cook, whose insights and ideas and hard work were absolutely crucial to the form this episode ultimately took. You've been listening to Salvation South Deluxe, proudly produced in cooperation with Georgia Public Broadcasting and its network of 20 radio stations around our state. Every Wednesday, we add a new 3-minute commentary about Southern stuff to our podcast feed, and every month or so, we add a longer deluxe story such as the one we have just told you. I'm Chuck Reese, your host and the editor-in-chief of Salvation South Magazine, which you can find 24/7 at salvationsouth.com. GPB's director of podcasts is Jeremy Powell, and none of this could have happened without the help and cooperation of wonderful people at GPB, including Sandy Malcolm, Adam Woodleaf, and Bert Wesley Huffman. We will be back next month with another full-length deluxe episode of the Salvation South podcast.